Moncrief on News Talk.
Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Right, here's your first question. And though this sounds more like marriage counselling than necessarily parenting, my twins are nearly 12 and my husband refuses to let them watch TV during the week at all. It's only allowed on weekend mornings and at that, only until he gets out of bed. As a result, my kids will be up at 6 a.m. on the weekend to get to see some TV before Dad gets up. It's causing huge arguments between myself and my husband as I disagree with this. I never signed up for this and feel it's incredibly unfair. When they were smaller, we limited their TV quite a bit and it was very controlled. And I was okay with that. But now they're almost 12, I feel they're old enough to make decisions for themselves. They have phones for music and a kids' chat app, which is very tightly controlled. I honestly don't think there is any harm in a little TV after school. In fact, I think it's nice. He thinks that bored kids are creative kids, but I can tell you that bored kids are unhappy kids. And I feel are spending their childhood in a very dreary way, just passing the time and waiting to go to bed. My kids aren't readers either. Now that after school activities are finishing up for summer, it's going to get worse. We live in the country, so we don't have many friends nearby that they can go and play with. My happiest memories are coming home from school and watching TV shows as a child. And even now, I see old theme tunes from old shows like Huckleberry Finn and the Brady Bunch, and they bring back such lovely memories. Is TV rotting their brains and lack of TV making them creative and clever? Because from where I'm sitting, I don't agree.
Yeah, I definitely feel I'm getting pulled into a discussion between two adults. And look, at what jumps out at me here, first and foremost, is that this is a really good example of not parenting on the same page. And in parenting, look, you know as well as I do, you're never going to be on the same page all the time. But we do need to kind of sit down and be able to say, well, what is your parental essential, those red line non-negotiable issues, versus what is a parental preference? Yeah, I prefer it this way, but there is some wiggle room here, because this seems like a parental essential clashing with somebody, another parental preference. The issue at hand is quite interesting. Like in the body of this letter, when you read out, you know, I feel they're spending their childhood in a dreary way and they're just passing time waiting to go to bed. I mean, that just sounded so grim. Mm. And I was wondering, well, why? Why is it that? Like, do they play together? Can they play independently? What else is going on? And I know some after school activities were mentioned, but the feel of this with, you know, no TV and you can only have TV on a Saturday until I get up, it does seem somewhat rigid. But that kind of its core premise is not wrong. You know, like boredom in moderation does breed desire, creativity, curiosity. Boredom, again, in moderation, does afford us that kind of free-floating state of attention, a bit of daydreaming, mind-wandering, that we really don't get enough of and our kids don't. And largely because of the influence of screens, we always have a distraction device at our fingertips. So we don't spend a lot of time being bored. So there are pro-social benefits to it, there's no question. But I think the way this is being framed is that they're either, well, if we leave them be bored and understimulated, they'll be creative. That's not quite the same thing, because being bored and being understimulated, they're different things. So I was really wondering about the Saturday morning bit, because it was interesting to me that TV is okay when parents want to lie in, you know, and then it's like, well, now I'm up, you can't have it. And I thought, okay, well, whose agenda is really setting the tone here with that? And so just to challenge you a little bit on that one, like just have a think about why is that okay? And when you come downstairs or come wherever they are watching TV, what is it you do with them? Because I'm also just picking up, there's no reference here to activities you do as a family, to adventures, outings, play, family play. There's no feel, and that doesn't mean it's not happening, but there's no feel of it here in this letter. And if you say to your kids, we're not watching TV, what are you finishing that sentence with? Because we're going to the woods, we're going to this beach, we're going to climb a mountain, we're going to go do something. Like, what is the rest of that sentence? And if you're sitting there going, nothing, they sit there because I want them to be bored, I think you're overestimating what boredom is going to produce.
Yeah.
At that level, I really do. Limiting screen time is sensible, but be very clear about how their time is to be used as much as how it is not to be used. And this just feels quite one-sided. And I think that might be what's causing the tension. Also, you have 12-year-old twins. They are going to be well clued into the fact that you are not on the same page about this and that one of you would allow them watch TV. So this could become a real hotbed of tension.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it is already.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that he's concerned about TV, but they have phones.
Yeah, I saw that, but it's really limited to music, isn't it? Their phone use, I think, is just for, and even that though is a mixed message. Just like the Saturday morning thing is a mixed message, and you've got two kids waking up super early to squash in a week's worth of TV into one morning. Mm. Like, how is that any better than them having a little, but more often?
Yeah, it's kind of almost curiously old fashioned. I'm, you know, old enough to remember when there was a huge concern about TV would rot a generation's brain and all that, and they'd be just staring mindlessly into it.
No, absolutely. And I think it depends as well if we were looking at, you know, what they're watching, you know. So if they're, you know, on YouTube and you can't control what they're going to be looking at and it could be anything and everything, fair. OK, let's put some boundaries in there. But if it's a particular TV show that they like, having one episode every day or every other day isn't actually at 12 years old going to do them any harm.
Yeah. OK, so she needs to go back and have another chat with them.
I think, yeah, just a discussion, because you're at the moment you've parents at very opposite ends on this. And so it's not that one saying, see, I told you were wrong, or hey, I told you I was right about boredom. It's actually about both of you coming quite a distance in towards the middle, because I think you do need an agreed parental strategy on this.
Our 5-year-old often resorts to baby talk when they need something or when they're looking for affection. It drives my husband mad, and he immediately lectures her about being a big girl now. I don't know what is the best way to deal with this issue, so I don't reprimand her. How do we get her out of this phase?
Yeah, I wouldn't be reprimanding her. I think you're right on that. And when you call it a phase, I'm interested in that, because she's 5 years old. She is still really young. Mm. 5 is still really young. I think societally we do expect quite a lot of our very young children. And I think when you're 5 and you're regressing to baby talk, it's not that big a regression. Like, it is still quite recent for them. But I would say she's regressing to a time when all of her needs were met for her, and a simple utterance, little guttural sound, would have elicited huge attention, garnered her lots of, oh my God, look, and you made a noise, and what are you looking for? And I think kids remember a time when, gosh, everything was great and done for me, and I didn't have to do much to please you, actually. I just had to be. And so when I'm listening to this, I suspect that what they're describing as attention seeking is really connection seeking. And I'd be curious, what is it she's looking for your attention for? Like, what's the goal there? What purpose is it? Is she wants your attention to look at her drawing, to read with her, to play with her, to sit and watch something with her, just to be with her? Because that's more connection seeking than attention seeking. I would approach this in quite a gentle way, actually, you know, using acknowledge the what's happening. You know, I see you really want my help, or I see you really want my full focus on this at the moment. Then communicate a limit with her. You know, you don't have to use your baby voice. You have a great 5-year-old voice. I love hearing your 5-year-old voice. Try ask me again, but using your 5-year-old voice. And that's the targeting the alternative. The next time you want my attention, just tap my arm or put your hand on mine and give a little squeeze, and I'll know that you're looking for me. Or just use your own voice and call me over, and I'll know that you're looking for me. I might not be able to come straight away, but I'll let you know, yeah, I'm on my way in a couple of minutes. I think reframing it in a way that tells her, here's what you can do, but I know it's because you want my attention. She may also just be doing a little bit of play. She's also at that age when she's going into developmental role play stage, you know, when you insert yourself into the role of others and you're trying out new things. And it would be quite normal at her age to play out being parent and baby in role play. Mm. And she may be doing a little bit of this with her friends in school, where one of them is the baby and the other one is the parent, or whatever it might be. So you could be just looking at a kid who's exploring some role play options as well, which is very healthy, not just normal, it's very healthy. So if there is an option to play parent and baby with her, super, do that. And then you can just de-role her at the end and say, and now we're done with our game. 5-year-old you is going to come out to the kitchen and help me with something. Mm. And you want to emphasize all the benefits of being 5, because you can do things that babies can't do.
Yeah, but even apart from the fact that it seems to irk the husband a bit, there's nothing in and of itself wrong with what she's
not
doing.
Not at all. Yeah. No. Like, and it's not a concern. You know, it wouldn't be something I go, gosh, that's worrying. It's more if it is causing you bother, there are ways that you deal with it that isn't reprimanding her, because what you shouldn't do is scold her or give out to her for this.
Yeah.
But I would suspect it's part of her play stage. And I think if you can do more of that small world play, you know, where everybody gets to take on a role and do the little voices of the little characters, the Sylvanians or the dinos or trains or whatever it is that are talking to each other, and then have her in role where you get to be the baby and she gets to be the big sister or the parent, or then reverse the roles. I think you'll work this out in a really kind of creative way.
I'm a little heartbroken at the moment. I'm wondering if Joanna can help. My daughter, who's 11, came home from school a few months back, telling me that she has nothing in common with her classmates. She can't seem to find anything to talk to her classmates about. Since then, we've tried enrolling her in dancing, camogie and art classes to see if she can find something that helps her fit in. None of these work. Truth to be told, she's a very inquisitive girl and she's at her happiest when she's off exploring in the back garden or reading a book. I don't want to change her personality. I love it. My husband and I often joke that we've our own little Matilda, but I do get upset that she finds it so hard to fit in. Is there a particular reason why she could find social connections difficult? She seems okay with cousins, etc.
Oh, I really feel for this little girl. Oh. But, you know, I love how she was able to tell her parents about her struggle. You know, hey, this is really hard for me and I'm trying and it's not working. And then as parents, you acted, as we do as parents, to fix it for her, you know, by identifying an array of activities that she could try. But, you know, Sean, what jumps out at me is these activities might be activities that interest her peers more than they interest her. Mm. And, you know, from a parent point of view, you're like, well, I know a few in her class do this thing and that thing. So if I put her in that will help. I would be saying to you, find the things that you know so well she likes. She loves exploring in the back garden and reading a book. I would be looking at, can she join scouts or something like that, you know, adventurers that have those kind of camping, outdoor doing experiences, and contact your local library to see if they have a book club for her age group or a comic book club or a writing club in the library. Libraries are great resources and often underutilized, actually. People aren't often going, oh, I didn't think of my library for that. I think we should be thinking of our library a lot more. So link in with them and see what they have, because that way they are her interests and you're putting her in contact with kids with whom she already will have a shared interest. That's going to be more helpful with her forming peer connections than trying to take up something that really doesn't spark joy for her or isn't interesting to her. And aside from this, and again, with all my empathy in the world, I know why you jumped in to fix this for her. You know, you really do, she's 11, want to also just respond with empathy and say, oh gosh, that's really hard. And I'm really glad that you could tell me that. What do you think would help? Or if you could change it, what change would you make? And support her in just finding her own way through it. I always think it's worth having a chat with the teacher when stuff like this comes in, especially because she's coming home from school talking about it and it's her classmates in school she's referring to. School is such a huge part of our kids' lives. Like, it's most of their day every day. So when that's not going well, it's very stressful for children and, of course, us parents. Have a chat with the teacher. I know we're coming into the final few weeks of school, especially for this age group. So if you were going to have a chat, do it sooner rather than later. And it might just enable you, especially if you know, and you might not yet, but if you do know who next year's teacher is going to be, that you could just proactively have a conversation that this is something that she's struggling with. This is what we see at home. Here's how we're responding. And the teacher could be aware of it and maybe orchestrate some connections in class or seating arrangement that would be more supportive for her.
Yeah. God, she's quite mature, though, when she comes home and says she's nothing in common with her classmates. That's
yeah. And her parents describing her as inquisitive as well is part of that pseudo maturity, isn't it? That she may just want to be connecting with kids in a different way than her peers are developmentally at the moment. It can all balance out, but she might be just, from a sort of, you know, social emotional perspective, a little bit ahead. And so the others are playing or talking or acting in a different way than she is. So I think just going with the interest she has and finding kids that she can connect with around those interests would be helpful around that.
Right. I think we're back to relationship counselling again. Yeah. My husband and I are about to have our first baby in the next few weeks. It's a girl. He's Brazilian and I'm Irish. He broke it to me the other night that in Brazilian culture, it is traditional for baby girls to get their ears pierced. I realise now that this is true, as I have noticed it on our many trips to Brazil. I always find it shocking because we simply don't have the same culture here in Ireland. He's adamant that we need to get this done to honour his heritage. I really am in two minds, but want him to feel comfortable. What do you suggest?
Oh, blame Joanna. Joanna said.
One here?
it is like a bit like that kind of parental essentials versus preferences, but there's a cultural aspect to it in this instance. You know, you are a blended cultural family. That's what I would say. And that is going to call for compromise a lot. But compromise should never be one person making all the compromises and the other person holding rigidly in, no, this is how it has to be. Compromise has to be more of that kind of two-way free-flowing process for it to be effective. You know, what's typical in Brazil and not typical in Ireland, that means you both have to move a little. And it might be she does get her ears pierced, but not as a baby. Maybe you look at it a little earlier than you would classically have thought of doing it in Ireland if you were ever thinking of doing it. But, you know, that you might meet in the middle, in other words. And I always think, you know, you do need to reflect how this cultural practice information is new for you, okay, or you hadn't realized it. And it might be worth the two of you sitting and doing some cultural information swaps. You know, are you aware of that? And in my country this, or in my culture that, you know, you're still going to occasionally, by the way, get caught off guard, no matter how much of that talking that you do. But the emphasis has to be on compromise. I would say if you sit and make a list of what matters most to each of you, okay? Mm. And then what matters to both of you. But hold in mind, there is no right way. It's not that one culture has it nailed and the other doesn't. There are differences of experience there. You know, we look, Sean, at in individualistic cultures, it's really parents who make the decisions for their own children. But in more collective cultures, if extended family would expect to be involved in decision making around the child or to have a say or an equal voice. And this can get, you know, really contentious. Even if you were both from collective cultures, it would be contentious because the decisions about your child will have to be made between you. One or other of you might want to run your thought process by extended family, but you have to sit down and think, okay, if your husband is saying, but if she doesn't get her ears pierced as a baby, my extended family are going to think that's dreadful and there's going to be an issue and it's going to cause stress. And then you might be countering with, well, my extended family are going to judge me if I do it.
Yes.
The reality is the two of you have to come to an agreement on what is going to happen in your family. And that's, we're talking about ear piercing here, but it could come up in blended culture families around religion, around education, around anything at all that you can think of. So it is worth ideally having those conversations ahead of time. You are still ever so slightly ahead of time because your baby is coming in the next few weeks, and good luck to you both on that. So it's really about saying, it's not going to happen immediately. Let's kick it out a little bit. Typically, I might wait until I'm going to pick an arbitrary number now, say 5, 6, 7 years old. But how about we meet in the middle and we say 3, something like that. That's an example. But it is going to come up time and again. So it's no harm that the two of you get. How do we deal with these issues when they come up?
I suppose it depends on the school, but there might be, you know, when it's time for her to be going to school, there might be school rules about wearing earrings.
There can be. And I think in a lot of primary schools, if there is jewellery, there is a statement that they should be small studs, not rings, things like that. And that's more to, so there aren't accidental, you know, incidents that are health and safety grounds. But again, proactively seek out that information ahead of time. Absolutely.
Joanna Fortune, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.